want a pickle. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want a tickle. I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to die. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. You know, been about 12 years now I've been singing this dumb song. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing that somebody can get away with singing a song this dumb for that long. But, you know, hey, you know, what's more amazing than that is that somebody can make a living singing a song this dumb. That's America. You know, I told everything there was to tell about it when I wrote it. How come? Why? What for? But you know, the one thing that I always used to neglect to explain was the significance of the pickle. There was a time I was riding my bike. I was going down a mountain road. I was doing 150 miles an hour. On one side of the mountain road, there was a mountain. And on the other side, there was nothing. There was just a cliff in there. I wasn't paying attention, you know. I was just driving down the road. And now, all of a sudden, by accident, a string broke off my guitar. It broke, you know, right there, went flying across the road that way, wrapped itself around a yield sign. Well, the sign didn't break. It didn't come out the ground, and the string stayed wrapped around it. Stayed in the other end of my guitar, held on to my guitar with one hand. I held on to the bike with the other. I made a sharp turn off the road. Luckily, I didn't go into the mountain. I went over the cliff. I was doing 150 miles an hour sideways at 500 feet down at the same time. I was looking for the cops because, you know, I knew it was illegal. Well, I knew that was it. I knew I didn't have long to live in this world. And in my last remaining seconds in the world, I knew it was my obligation to write one last farewell song to the world. I took out a piece of paper. I pulled out a pen, and it didn't write. Well, I had to put another ink cartridge in it. I sat back, and I thought a while, and it come to me. It come like a flash, like a vision, burnt across the clouds. I just wrote it down. I learned it right away. I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want a tickle. I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to die. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. Well, you know, I knew it wasn't the best song I ever wrote, but I didn't have time to change it. You know, the most amazing thing was that I didn't die. I landed on the top of a police car, and it died. I come into town at a screaming 175 miles an hour, singing my new motorcycle song. I stopped out in front of the deli. Out in front of the deli was a man eating the most tremendous pickle. A pickle the size of 4 pregnant watermelons, just a huge monster pickle. He walked up to me, pushed a pickle in my face, started asking me questions. I noticed a cord hanging from the end. Well, I knew it wasn't an ordinary pickle. It was about the same time a 4-foot cop arrived with a 5-foot gun. A cop that one time must have been around 6'3", but was met at the bottom of a mountain with a flying, singing, writing weirdo freak. And, well, it was that very moment. The pickle with the ticket was going down my throat. I knew for sure I didn't want a pickle. I don't want a pickle. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. You know, we didn't get to do a show last week. The internet was down here in Fort Lauderdale. I just didn't get it together despite that problem. I managed to broadcast when we had no internet during the hurricane last year. I guess because I took it as some kind of challenge. I made it happen. Used my iPad to connect. But, well, last week, oh, hell, it was just too much. that we missed our slot, which we hardly ever do. And I want to apologize to you good folks out there at your Revolution Radio, where we're streaming live right now. And remember, it's listener-supported radio, so send them a donation. I am Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. And I'm proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome these special guests, Richard Flamer, James Fetzer, Mickey Z, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferruggio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, Florida, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Queens, Astoria, New York City, in San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas, Mexico, and wherever you are. My recommended list, Jim Fetzer's blog, Freedom of Information Request, reveals March for Our Lives planned months before the shooting took place. Also, Paul Craig Roberts, we are in the last days before all hell breaks loose. Donald Trump has announced very clearly that he will be authorizing some kind of retribution to the CIA faked chemical attack in Dalma, Eastern Ghouta, in the coming 24 to 48 hours. In my opinion, with Israel's servant John Bolton as Trump's trusted national security advisor, war with Russia is inevitable. Taking Dr. Rowe's advice, I am opening the champagne, by which Dr. Rowe does not mean to celebrate, but to enjoy the last moments of life. It remains to be seen whether the conflict set in motion by Israel and its demented puppet in Washington can be avoided, as Washington is lost in its arrogance. Only decisive and firm Russian slaps across Washington's idiot face can save life on Earth. Also recommended, Scott Creighton, willieloman.wordpress.com. Also recommended, memoryholeblog.org. Also, the Boston Unbombing on YouTube. And the Corbett Report, The Truth at Last, The Assassination of Martin Luther King. And on YouTube, Tucker Carlson Tells Truth About Syria. And this is Jimmy Dore regarding what Carlson surprisingly said. Let me put it to you this way. Let's take them at their word. So we want to start a war because he gassed 60 people. We bomb hospitals all the time. We're right now helping Saudi Arabia commit a genocide in Yemen. We killed 500,000 Iraqis with our sanctions in the 90s. We don't care about killing people. That's not what this is about. If we cared about killing people, we'd be trying to stop this genocide in Yemen, but we're not. And if we were concerned about killing people, we would provide health care for our own citizens. The final book in the Geronimo's Revenge series is now available. The revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. It's all right here. The Geronimo's Revenge trilogy from CWG Press. Crusher versus the Empire, Crusher in Wonderland, and now Geronimo's Revenge. All three books in the series available at Amazon. The mid-April spring issue of Penn Magazine is now available online at pennmagazine.us, P-E-N-N magazine.us. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., one of the first honest researchers into the John Kennedy murder by the U.S. Deep State, which was the opening big event leading to the murders of Martin King and Robert Kennedy, Oklahoma City, 9/11, Sandy Hook, Boston, San Bernardino, Oakland, Orlando, Las Vegas, Parkland, etc. Go here to read Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N magazine.us. Also available in Groovy flip page format at archive.org. Thank you. Mike Palachuk, editor, Chuck Gregory, publisher, Jeremy Scahill, Matt Tavey, Noam Chomsky, James Tracy, Kevin Barrett, Jim Fetzer, Paul Craig Roberts, Frank Cordero, Sam Smith, William Bloom, and a book excerpt from Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town, PennMagazine.us and archive.org.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferruggio from Port Orange, Florida. He blogs on so many places, I can't list them all. Information Clearinghouse, World News Trust, Op-Ed News, and many, many more. Here's Phil Ferruggio with It's the Empire, stupid.
Okay, good evening, working stiffs. How about a Bolton from the past? As most people know now, Trump picked Don Bolton to be his new national security advisor. Many progressive and libertarian outlets have already lambasted Bolton for his neocon credentials and agenda. With that nasty smirk on his face, Bolton actually publicly has come out for the preemptive attacking of both Iran and North Korea, going on for years now. And we can add Syria to that lately as well. Well, what I want to focus on is another aspect of this make-believe tough guy, as the Billy Batts character in the film Goodfellas referred to the late, to the Joe Pesci character, Tommy DeVito. And Bolton is just that, as was Junior Bush, Cheney, and a host of others from that administration. Now, this is right out of Wikipedia about Bolton, okay? During the 1969 Vietnam war draft lottery, Bolton drew number 185. Draft numbers corresponded to birth dates. As a result of the Johnson and Nixon administration's decision to rely largely on the draft rather than the reserve forces, joining a guard or reserve unit became a way to avoid service in the Vietnam War. Bolton enlisted in the Maryland Army National Guard in 1970 rather than wait to find out if his draft number would be called. The highest number called was up to 195. After serving in the National Guard for 4 years, he served the United States Army Reserve until the end of his enlistment 2 years later. He wrote in his Yale 25th reunion book, quote, "I confess I had no desire to die in a Southeast Asian rice paddy. I considered the war in Vietnam already lost." In an interview, Bolton discussed his comment in the reunion book, explaining that he decided to avoid service in Vietnam because by the time, quote, "by the time I was about to graduate in 1970, it was clear to me that opponents of the Vietnam War had made it certain we could not prevail, and that I had no interest in going there to have Teddy Kennedy give it back to the people I might die to take it away from," unquote. What a load of horseshit. Oh, yeah, John, you would have enlisted in the real army and not the guaranteed to never be sent to the NAM National Guard if you felt the so-called war was winnable in 1970. Guess what, John? I got this nice bridge in Brooklyn for sale. In Yale, you know you were gung-ho to kill those commies and stop the spread of Asian-style Bolshevism. You know that. Just like Junior Bush, 2 years your elder, who felt the same way and took a similar route, thanks to his dad, in the Texas Air National Guard. One wonders if you were a few years older and around the D.C. politics in 1961, if you would have agreed with the unanimous suggestion by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to John Kennedy at the time to do a preemptive nuclear attack on the Soviet Union, or in the fall of 62, to ditto that upon Cuba. It seems you love war, John, so long as it's not you doing the fighting. Oh, yes. And what about Trump, your new boss? He, too, must have banged the bongos for our so-called Vietnam War, so long as he remains safe in his college of deferment. Folks, you all out there who decide to support and vote for either Trump or Clinton in 2016 sure did your homework. She being the classic warmonger, and he the phony Democrat populist. Either way, we get the neocons running our government as the rest of we working stiffs go down the drain. Thank you.
And now it's time for Revolution College, underground night school in the basement of the abandoned humanities building, Thursdays. The course description: what the hell is going on around here? Vince Lombardi.
Real change can come through knowledge of what the FBI and CIA are doing to this country through propaganda. They've done it for decades all over the world. Why not here? Especially here. The American system needs to be overhauled. We know that. What we need is a nonviolent revolution. The biggest battle is being fought with information. The American people are an incredible, untapped force for good, but they don't really know much of anything about what's really going on. So what needs to happen is the base work for revolution, awareness. We just don't know enough that we need a revolution, that it can come about through knowledge, even though that might sound boring at first. We're doing this for that very purpose, because the world is reaching a point where we really need to do something. The battle of ideas is percolating below the surface. It is a battle the corporate state is steadily losing. An increasing number of Americans are getting it. Once ideas shift for a large portion of a population, once the vision of a new society grips the popular imagination, the old regime is finished. This is where we are headed.
Tonight's Revolution College lesson. It is a very dangerous time in our country's history right now. People are starting to be very afraid. People are talking in whispers. We are very much living in a climate of intimidation and fear, and this is very much a silencing tactic, so that we are starting to self-censor, very Orwellian times. The American people have been playing a game of pretend with ourselves. We are propping up a collective delusion where we are not addressing the elephant in the room because it scares people and people don't know what to do about it. Since 2001, when the towers came down, this country, instead of keeping our wits, we were subjected to a very deliberate propaganda campaign, a fear-mongering campaign, a disinformation campaign. We got swept up in this mantra of patriotism and this threat. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. So thus you become the enemy. You have to disallow the laws of physics to believe the official story of 9/11. We still to this day, 17 years later, talk about 9/11 under our breath. We've gone along with all these massive rights grabs against us. Anybody who has investigated it knows the official story is a lie. It has nothing to do with right or left. It has to do with keeping our heads so we can see what's before our very eyes.
We'll see you next Thursday night for the next session of Revolution College, underground in the abandoned humanities building. And now for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees, can't see a thing. He's on Twitter on his phone, chatting with the Kremlin. Every once in a while, he has to go stop somebody, but then it's back to the trees and Twitter. He says he believes he needs to stay in constant contact. He stops people who look important, makes them wait, delays them in their hurry in seeking the American dream, the American life, the American way. And then he just smiles, tips his hat, and says, "You all have a nice day." But he is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax, also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my Piroshki cart. When your dogs tell you that the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax. In the fading yellow box. And now, and now, cue the Rimsky-Korsakov. And now for another episode of Professor Rutherford P. Roswell's Conspiracy Corner. We find Professor Rutherford P. Roswell sitting at home, getting ready to begin his weekly podcast from his basement. He has his computer and his headset and professional-looking microphone with the fireplace glowing in front of him and his English setter, Apollo, lying on the carpeted floor. Professor Roswell checks the time on the computer, sips his sleepy time tea, swivels in his chair, and draws the Crown Royal single malt from the glass case, turns back, sprinkles a dash into the tea, and sets the bottle on the floor near his feet. Around him on the walls are photos of Roswell and the important people he has interviewed over the decades. He receives an email notification from the network telling him the show will start soon. He smiles as he types salutations to the many listeners now showing up in the chat room from around the world. Bemidji, hello. Anchorage, hi there all. Vienna, hello. Innsbruck, Copenhagen, Marseille, Bald Knob, Big Creek. Hello, hello, welcome, hello.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now with your host, Professor Rutherford B. Roswell, it's time again for Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Sleepy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands close to your chest and slowly fall asleep. Sleep, sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk. Sleep, sleep. Sleepy Time Tea. Forget about it and sleep.
You. 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 Stop whatever it is that you're doing, because it really doesn't matter. As long as the persistent lie about the JFK, RFK, and MLK murders persists in this country, nothing you do, working out, going to work, eating, sleeping, talking, none of it matters. Really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. None of it matters. You do not matter. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to all. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get right to it, shall we? The U.S. government killed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Today marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the most significant black man in United States history. Western news media are quick to hollowly mourn his death. These are the same mainstream voices that, in concert with the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, almost uniformly condemned King when he came out against America's criminal war in Southeast Asia during his April 4, 1967 Riverside Church speech. Abundant evidence now suggests that 1 year later, the U.S. government orchestrated his assassination. Unsurprisingly, major media continue to cling to the debunked government conspiracy theory that James Earl Ray was the sole assassin of Dr. King. As is often the case, the truth is far deeper than such make-believe journalism is willing to fathom. The United States is especially fond of dedicating monuments, boulevards, even airports to the elected leaders and the public officials its lettered agencies have murdered. Dr. William Pepper's research and legal efforts have left no doubt that the U.S. government was directly involved in the April 4, 1968 assassination of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. As Coretta Scott King remarked, the jury was clearly convinced by the extensive evidence that was presented during the trial that the conspiracy of the mafia, local, state, and federal government agencies were deeply involved in the assassination of my husband. At the time and to this day, the indisputable facts brought to light in the case were blacked out entirely by U.S. corporate media. Nor are they a topic of discussion in American college classrooms, let alone grade school, furthering the country's gross inability to reflect on and come to terms with its complex history. Pepper details the responsibility of the U.S. government for the assassination of Martin Luther King after more than 30 years investigation. He won a jury verdict against the U.S. government for that assassination in a civil suit he brought for Coretta Scott King, widow of MLK Jr. Although there were two snipers in their spotters in place, employed by the U.S., a third shooter in bushes, a hired off-duty Memphis policeman fired the final fatal shot. Bill Pepper was a friend of Martin Luther King in the last year of his life. Some years after King's death, Bill Pepper went on to represent James Earl Ray in his guilty plea and subsequent conviction. Pepper believed that Ray was framed by the federal government and the King killed a conspiracy that involved the FBI, the CIA, the military, the Memphis police, and organized crime figures from New Orleans and Memphis.
www.thebostonunbombing.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Chuck visited with Frank earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right now.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
Huh. Okay, so you got me when I have two big cans of fish that I had in the ovens. Now, each pan had about 20 pounds or 25. It was frozen solid. This is the third day now, and I had to pick through the last couple pounds just to get it in the pan. And I was, after 2 hours, I was switching pans, and I was in the middle of pulling up one pan and putting it in the sink so that I can strain the water that came out of the initial cooking. So you caught me at a bad time. Oh. So I'm okay now. The fish is taken care of, duly seasoned and cooling in the refrigerator. Okay. I took care of all my dirty pans and responsibilities, and now I'm sitting on the eloquent front stairway in which we have all the posters and stuff. Uh-huh. From our many, many things that we did. This particular room's display went up for the 25th anniversary. So that's 15 years ago. That's how old the display is. So got a lot of the founding stuff here, giving you a bit of a, kind of like the White House. It's the Dingman House kind of tour. I've spoken of this before. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'd like to make a plug, if you don't mind, and see if anybody's listening. Listen, folks, we need some people on our mailing list. It's a great newsletter and newspaper. Comes out 4 times a year. Dorothy Day, the founder of our movement, put out a newspaper called The Catholic Worker before she started Houses of Hospitality. We're propagandists. All that being said, if you will send me your name and correct mailing address, I will put you on our database, and you wouldn't have to spend another dime. Just read our stuff, and if you like it, support it. So this is the this is what you need to do. Send your mailing address to Frank Cordero, C-O-R-D-A-R-O, 713 Indiana Avenue, like the state, Indiana Avenue, 713, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. This is an experiment to see if there are any folks out there that are listening to this segment of the show, or like I suspect, since it's so short, 5 to 10 minutes, it's a good time to go to the bathroom too. So let's see who we got out there this week. Give a report between the last time we spoke and now, Jess and Ruby still have dropped out. Don't know where they're at. Continue to hold them in heart and prayer. And Julie Brown, our Catholic worker in Kurdistan, Iraq, she got some bad news. Her husband, whom she just recently married, is not being given even a visiting visa from Iraq. So how do you like that? That's a tough thing. And then we're in the middle of doing just kind of bouncing back from the winter. And a lot of things are happening. We're going to have a lot of people here this summer, younger people. I'm excited about that. And we got trials going on right here Monday with Eddie Bloomer and Greg Borchek and Brian Hayes, all of them Catholic workers. And I didn't even say that last weekend we were up in Duluth, just got back, and we had a very good weekend exploring the Native American issues up there and their struggle for water and land. And then we were able to do our own kind of Catholic worker witness with pipes. Right now, there's no, on the Minnesota side, they have not started digging. So there's these large fields of pipes. So the Catholic workers went out, prayed there, and the police came and decided not to arrest. And once they got done with their prayer, they came back. But that's what Catholic workers do. Whether they arrest or not, that's what we're trying to make this a holy struggle. So that was our contribution. It was a very good weekend. This coming weekend, then we're going right into trial. We're looking for a good summer to turn our attention back on the drone command and our Des Moines active war zone. Oh. So I'm gearing up in emotion. It got up to 70 here. That may not sound much for you folks in Florida, but for us, it was like, holy shit, these times actually do exist. Yeah. Don't have to wear a coat to walk outside. So that's all really good.
Okay.
All good.
Well,
so
good. Frank, I've noticed today, the second report I'd seen in 2 or 3 days about Catholic worker homes shutting down. One of them is your brother's. Another one is, I think, in California or someplace. I forget.
Well, the one in Kansas City, it's sad. They have a lot of support and stuff, just no living people. And they've been trying to get somebody for a couple of years. So sometimes these things happen that way, or maybe even more often they do. They all have their own life, and sometimes that lasts a lifetime. That's a good one. That's a good run. Then they pop up all over the place. It's in the nature of the worker.
I
should be very fragile easily brought down and then easily started again.
Okay.
It's
well,
a guarantee that you're always bottom feeders.
Okay. Well,
I know it's a strange thing, but it's a walk of faith. And yeah, I've seen a lot of them going, but at the same time, I know we're growing because 40 years ago, there were not 200 Catholic workers.
Yeah.
That's when we started. 40 years ago, there were not 5 houses that I knew of that were like 20 years old.
I see. Okay.
Now there's like 40.
All right.
Maybe more.
All right.
So this is quite a, we're still numerically insignificant, which is our redeeming demographic.
Yeah.
And that allows us to be free to really experiment with not being racist in a racist world, not being sexist in a sexist world, through proactive acts of mercy, the works of mercy, with a race to the bottom, and service is the game.
Well,
you know, that's the movement.
To the bottom, but I think the whole country is racing to the bottom, and your way of heading there is a whole lot better than what's going on in government and corporations and so forth. So,
yeah, I say freely choose it and make it a saintly path, a noble thing before it's thrusted on you, and you really don't want to do it because if it's not voluntary, it ain't cool.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
it's no fun.
We've got to cut this short, but thank you so much, Frank. Sorry,
that's right, Chuck. God bless. We'll see if we get a few cards and addresses so we can push our newsletter. It's a great one. Thank you.
So, because it really is a good newsletter. I get it. It's called the Via Pacis, which is
Via Pacis, the Way of Peace.
All right.
God bless. Bye bye.
In 2008, when we started the New American Dream website, and in 2011, the radio show, the premise has always been that there are no wrong questions. And what that meant, what that means, was nobody was talking about the things that are important. Nobody asking any questions. Please question this bullshit. We should not feel we are doing anything wrong by asking questions. Those should be allowed, even encouraged. If we are allowed to ask all the questions we have, and if there were someone willing to listen and provide answers, there would be no need for despair or dysfunction. We have the proof. Of course, Sandy Hook, Boston, Oklahoma City, JFK, RFK, King, Las Vegas, Parkland were operations set up by the U.S. government and others. And by inference, every single one of the others, San Bernardino, LAX, Charlottesville, Orlando, the Wellstone murders, and at least a dozen others. Have you read William Bloom and John Perkins and Douglas Valentine regarding the incredible dirty trick psyops the CIA and FBI have done over decades around the world to undermine any leader who tries to work for his or her people? Of course they would do the same thing here, especially here. The things we accept as real are fake, and the things we think are ridiculous myths are real. We give mountains of money to the military to expand the empire and to kill and to gain even more wealth for the already filthy rich. We don't even know we are living as part of an empire. Good Americans, good Romans, as we do all we can to scratch and to survive and to live our lives while meanwhile. It's a big deal. It's the whole enchilada. It's your parents' lives, your lives, your children and grandchildren. We must pay half of our tax dollars to the military while our bridges and roads collapse under our feet. While we worry and whisper, why can't we have health care? Or don't even think about it. Get busy as usual with your day in a dozen routine ways and not think about what all this means. What is the true reality of your life, your world? I do that all the time, try to escape. But there's nowhere to go. I've looked. And by the way, we didn't go to the moon either. And yet we believe in football. We will sit for hours and through hundreds of brain-melting commercials. The new American dream, not of new homes and toasters, but of becoming the kind of people we always thought we were. That is what the world needs. This is what the world is demanding of us right here, right now. We are the ones. Our next guest of the show is Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer joins us each month from his home at the Des Moines Catholic Worker, Des Moines Catholic, the San Cristobal de las Casas Chiapas Catholic Worker. I was thinking of the Des Moines Catholic Worker because the two are affiliated, Richard Flamer in Chiapas and Frank Cordero in Des Moines. So we're going to try and contact Richard Flamer in Chiapas right now.
Hello.
Well, hello, Richard. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Okay, thank you. This one's entitled After the Earthquake, Part 2. When last I spoke on the radio, I was still in the U.S. collecting tools, repairing the truck I would drive down, and looking for funds for rebuilding in Oaxaca after the earthquake of September the 8th of last year. I made one more trek from Omaha to Des Moines to visit with my wife before heading out. The nitty-gritty dirt band was playing in Des Moines, so I stayed a couple of extra days to take Araceli, my wife, Charlie, my friend, his brother Greg, and Susie, Greg's paramour, to the show. It was worth it. We all had a great time. Charlie, Greg, and Susie went back to Omaha, and I spent the night with my wife, loaded up the following morning. Michael Murphy of Omaha, who's a fantastic flute player of Native American music, along with being a reputable folk singer, he joined me in Omaha for a trip. We set out for Kansas City to spend the night and say goodbye to my cousin Peggy, who's had a heart transplant. I never know if I will see her again, so I always make a point of stopping to eat and spend the night. The following day, we took off through Missouri into Kansas, on into Oklahoma, made it into Dallas as evening fell. The Motel 6 seemed extravagant to me, but I'm getting older. I don't feel like spending the night sleeping in the truck as I used to do. Besides, I have a credit card these days. From Dallas, we made it down to San Antonio, where we spent a few days with my friends, Jim Groff and his wife, Patty. In San Antonio, I collected the packages from Amazon that friends had ordered and shipped to Jim's house. I did my banking at the local branch of Bank of America and ate some fine meals prepared by Jim, did some small repairs at the house, took off for the border at Brownsville. I like to get caught up on all the little things in Brownsville. Oil change, pick up parts for the truck that I can change later, stop at the local Walmart and change dollars to pesos. The following morning, with a good breakfast behind us, we crossed the border, or rather, tried to cross the border. A new, efficient immigration agent decided that I was a resident and not a tourist, but my residency certificate had expired, so she would not let us into the country formally. I turned around and went to the other checkpoint where I paid a bribe of $30 to an older agent. We got the immigration squared away. Customs and the permission for the truck were another matter. I finally put the truck in Mike's name, got insurance for Mexico, which is different from the U.S., and met with the customs agent. Since the truck was full of tools, which are heavy, I argued about taking everything out. I won the argument. It cost me a little more in both taxes and bribes. By 11 a.m., we finally got on the road to head south to Chiapas. That part of the trip, though usually dangerous for the drug traffickers, was calm since we had arrived a week after spring break. But in the second week of vacations for Mexico, Semana Santa or Holy Week, the police and military were patrolling everywhere. Good for security, but bad for all the traffic we had to drive through. I managed to get lost in late afternoon near Poza Rica in our second day of Mexico travel. Specifically, the new toll roads around Mexico are getting built in sections, and they entered one headed for Mexico City instead of Veracruz. Of course, it didn't help that they had no signs. After figuring out my mistake, I meandered through back roads for 3 hours till I found the right toll road. We headed towards Chiapas. We blew a tire when we hit a fragment of metal on the road, so we ended up having to take out half the tools to fix the tire anyway. The rest of the trip was safe and secure. Incidentally, the next time I pack the truck, I'm going to have that tire much closer. In Chiapas at the farm, we cleaned out the truck, made contacts with friends, and started going into San Cristobal for the week. Since Michael had only a short time here, we rushed around setting up a couple of concerts, moving tools, meeting up with friends, etc. After a couple of days in San Cristobal, Michael wanted to see where some of his donation. Specifically, he was donating money for scholarships, along with other friends, to send teenagers to the Colegio, or advanced high school, in the nearest town of any size, from the small, repatriated refugee community of Yolanda Hodge, which boasts the only junior high around the area. Since the Colegio is 7 hours by bus, the girls who need to go, or who want to go, need to be residential students. There's so few opportunities for women in Guatemala, it is a rare and good thing this process of education. Getting to Yolanda Hosh is always an ad hoc kind of adventure. Driving from Mexico makes the trip 3 or 4 days, so we went by combi, small vans, bus, and in the back of a pickup. Trek took 6 hours, changing vehicles in Teopisca, Comitán, Carmen Shan, and Gracias a Dios. Once in Carmen Shan on the border, it isn't on the maps actually, but it does have a checkpoint for tourists. We took the motor taxis, small golf carts, to Gracias a Dios, bypassing immigration for both countries since I didn't want to have to pay any more bribes. Rick Renzi, a friend living in San Cristobal, was in accord with my wishes, so we went straight to a favorite restaurant for a good hearty breakfast, which caused us to miss the only bus going through Yolanda Hosh. So we caught a small van instead. Our time at Yolanda Hosh was brief but joyful. Michael gave a fleet and pop song concert for the middle school children. They all ate, went to bed early after talking to a small group of archaeologists who were staying at the conference center while digging at a post-classic Mayan site. In the morning, we had coffee and skipped the early bus to meet with the children from the kindergarten and their teachers. The two teachers had graduated from the Colegio in Nuevo Camingo, thanks to scholarships from the Omaha Diocese that I had raised some years back. What a hit. The children loved the flute music, as did the teachers. Normally, 4- and 5-year-olds are pretty restless, but this group sat transfixed while Michael played. The concert was worth the whole trip. Arriving back at the farm, we slept well. San Cristobal again for 2 more days with another concert for children on the Saturday before his departure. Michael was pleased, as was I. He left for Omaha by plane last Tuesday. I now have some time to myself, but I miss the company. Mostly because I don't speak much English here in Chiapas. I do get to read a lot. There's a lot of work. Many of the tools are delivered, some donated, some sold for small sums to local woodworkers, and the rest are going to Oaxaca, where the earthquake victims will be rebuilding their houses. I miss my wife. I miss my friends in the U.S. And I'm convinced I'm on the path God has given me. Sometimes I wish we were making a little less arduous. 4,000 miles in an old truck is tough. I need to find more money for the labor of building in the earthquake damage zones at my wife's hometown. Mexican government is providing materials, but no money for labor. The labor to build a small house is around $5,000. I would like to find first $2,500 to finish a small house owned by my wife, where we have housed a widow and her 3 girls. It just doesn't seem right to me that the 4 women should be living in that little tiny house that's roughly 16 by 14 with a bathroom to the side. So that's my latest. I'm back and I have so much to do, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to start. But the first thing I did when I got back was to write up this little time of my jaunt and to put some photographs together. I think I'll be sending them off to friends, the photographs and the text. it was a lot of fun, really hard work. And so when are one of you guys going to drive down here 4,000 miles and visit us?
Believe me, I would love to, Richard. Maybe it'll happen one of these years.
All right. Michael? Yeah.
Of course, it's farther for him.
About yeah.
But I have to go over water.
Yeah. Any questions?
Not so much questions as a comment that it just never ceases to amaze me the work that you put into this, your dedication to helping people, and I admire it. You're a hero of mine, Richard.
Oh. Well, while Michael was here, I have to mention, he wrote a song because we talked about my friend Eddie Bloomer at the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And I always tell people he's such a saint. And he always says, no, he said, yeah, maybe I'm a saint with rusty wings and brown stained shorts.
Yeah.
So Michael, while he was here, wrote a song about that. And I'm anxious for him to record it.
Well, yeah, I would like to hear that. Sure.
Richard, what's your plans for the coming year?
I have to go up for surgery on my eyes in September, October.
Where can people send money to help you with that?
Over at Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard Street, that's Izzard, Izzard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102.
Your eyes, seriously? What's wrong?
It's an old people's common sort of problem.
Like cataracts?
But cataracts it is.
Where you got to go?
Up to the Des Moines VA Center, up to the Veterans Hospital there. But other than that, I'm just going to keep working. Got lots to do.
All right. Talk to you next month.
Richard, we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, take care.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern, and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft guns pointed to action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
All hands man your battle stations.
Be nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
You have not seen it, do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer is a retired college professor. He's a reporter. He's a radio show host. He's a researcher. And he's going to visit with us right now from his home in Madison or near Madison, Wisconsin. So, Jim Fetzer.
Mike, Chuck, great to be back with you again. I was fairly dumbfounded to read that residents of Deerfield, Illinois have 60 days to turn in their assault weapons or face fines of up to $1,000 a day. Earlier this week, the village board of trustees passed an ordinance which banned certain types of assault weapons and large capacity magazines, including the Ruger 10/22, which can accept magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. Semi-automatic pistols that can hold more than 10 rounds have also been banned. Law enforcement and retired law enforcement members of the community are exempt from the ban. Residents will have to either sell the weapons, transfer ownership to someone living outside the town,
turn them into police, or pay the exorbitant fines, which range from $250 to $1,000 per day per gun. The deadline is June 13th. Authorities justify the ban by pointing to the recent spate of mass shootings, including last year's Sutherland Spring shooting, which was stopped by a man who used one of the very guns that Deerfield has now banned. It's really completely outrageous. And indeed, as part of the explanation for this, it continues. The rationale mentioned for recent, the rationale mentions four recent shooting incidents that have claimed a total of 150 lives. The shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School that left 17 dead, a massacre at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, that killed 26 people, the Las Vegas Music Festival shooting that left 58 dead, and the Pulse nightclub mass shooting in Orlando, Florida, that killed 49 people. But all of those were fabricated or fake. No one appears to have died at any of them unless someone inadvertently had a heart attack. I mean, this is ridiculous beyond belief, insulting, stupidity. So I have published an open letter to the Deerfield, Illinois Board of Trustees. You have both the law and the facts wrong here. On my blog at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, which I'd like to share with you. You and your legal, Deer Village Board of Trustees, you and your legal counselor, Matthew Rose of Rosenthal, Murphy, Koblenz, and Donahue, appear to have both your facts and the law wrong, whereas I understand the requirements of legal advisors. They are obligated to ensure that the advice they provide to their clients is consistent with truth, and that they shall not seek to mislead by an artifice or false statement of fact or law. That has not happened in this case. The rationale for passing this extraordinary and, to me, on its face, blatantly unconstitutional constraint upon the Second Amendment are four reported shooting incidents that have claimed 150 lives. The shooting in Parkland, Florida, which left 17 dead. The Sutherland Springs, Texas shooting, which took 29 lives. The Las Vegas shooting, another 58. And the Orlando shooting that killed 49 more. But you have not verified the facts. I am a former Marine Corps officer and retired university professor who spent 35 years offering courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning, who retired from the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota in 2006 as a distinguished McKnight University professor. I have hundreds of published articles and dozens of books. See, for example, my curriculum vitae at www.d.umn.edu/tildejfetzer/. My research on politically significant events where the government has motives to mislead or deceive the public began with JFK, where I organize a research group including a world authority on the human brain, who is also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics, also an MD and board certified in radiation oncology, a physician who was in trauma room number one when JFK's body was brought in and 2 days later was responsible for the care and treatment of his alleged assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, in trauma room number two, and other highly qualified experts on his death. We discovered that the autopsy x-rays had been altered to conceal a fist-sized blowout to the back of the head. That the brain shown in diagrams and photographs in the National Archives is not that of JFK. That the home movies of the assassination were extensively edited to conceal the true causes of his death. And more, which I published in Assassination Science, 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza, 2000, and The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, 2003, which are available to review on Amazon.com. Having discovered the government lies, even in cases of the greatest importance, I have continued my research in collaboration with many other experts on 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Las Vegas, and now Parkland. None of them occurred as we have been told. I have done many video presentations about these events, including most recently, How to Spot a False Flag, in which I explain on the basis of my collaborative research how they were done to deceive the public to promote a political agenda. In my edited book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, 2015, for example, I published the research of 13 experts, including six current or retired PhD college professors. We established that the building was laden with asbestos and other biohazards and had been closed by 2008. There were no students there. What happened was a two-day FEMA drill where we even found the manual. Amazon banned the book, so I released it as a PDF. You can download it by title for free. Similarly, for the other events you cited as your rationale, where none of them was as you have been told. Since YouTube has been taking them down, you might have to search for the real deal must-see Sandy Hook and Boston bombing update, or Charlottesville, two cars plus two drivers plus two takes equals totally fake, a Vegas update with Dr. Jim Fetzer and Scott Bennett, or the Parkland puzzle, how the pieces fit together. The books I have published about them are at moonrockbooks.com. There are many reasons why I believe you have committed a blunder in moving to take guns away from law-abiding citizens. They are not the problem. And how will your community defend itself if riots break out in Chicago and spill over into your community? Or if a motorcycle gang came to town and began looting your stores and raping your women? European nations overrun with immigrants wish they had a Second Amendment so they could defend themselves against assaults. My concern is that appropriate actions only take place when they are based upon true beliefs. William Casey, whom Ronald Reagan appointed as director of the CIA, reportedly told his staff, "Our disinformation campaign will be a success when everything the American people believe is false." Since Barack Obama nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, precluding the use of propaganda and disinformation within the United States, we have been coming closer and closer to realizing Casey's goal. If you review the research to which I am linking, you will rapidly discover that you have acted on the basis of false beliefs, which is hardly surprising since the mainstream media has been reinforcing the political agenda of the deep state, which wants to deprive us of our rights under the First and Second Amendments. If, once you learn the facts about these cases, you continue to want to deprive the residents of Deerfield of their right to keep and bear arms, so be it. That is your decision. But you should not be acting on the basis of beliefs that are false. James H. Fetzer, Ph.D., McKnight Professor Emeritus, University of Minnesota, Duluth. And, of course, we know the situation is grotesque. The kinds of cases they cite don't work on their behalf. They don't have their facts right. The permit for the Cult Pulse Club, for example, that expired 3 years earlier. The Parkland shooting was staged during simulated ammo. It's called simunition. The Las Vegas event was a movie with special visual effects. The Texas church shooting was one more organized event to mislead the American people. Gun bans, moreover, lead to increases in homicides. The UK has banned guns, and the UK homicide rate went up. It's now experiencing a skyrocketing increase in knife attacks. So the London mayor wants to ban all of those killer knives. Nations with the highest gun ownership have the lowest homicide rates. And I repeat once again, in the North America with among the highest gun ownership, lowest homicide rate, Latin and South America, low gun ownership, high homicide rate, you can have your choice. High gun ownership and low homicide rates, or low gun ownership, high homicide rates, where the mayor of London even now is enacting a knife control policy to crack down on stabbing epidemics. What comes next? Potato peelers? Don't be dumb. The founding father knew what they were doing. It's a hazard to your health to contradict their wise opinions. Support the Second Amendment.
Last month, when I was at the Open Mic Tuesday at ArtServe, I listened to someone who impressed me quite a lot. His nickname, at least, is Turkana. And I'm going to play something that I recorded during the open mic. Here it is.
This poem that I'm going to do, it was in honor of Black History Month. So it's titled The N-Word Poem. So this is my original poem that I wrote. All right. Nobody should be judged by the color of their skin, race, or nationality. I dream of a world where there's no violence, but truth is that would never become a reality. I want to talk about a word that I hear every day, a word that was being used back when people were getting hung off of trees and ropes. Over 400 years later, and I still don't see no hope. You see, people are still blind to the fact that it doesn't matter if you're white or black. Whenever this word is being used, many different people have many different opinions and different views. You're disrespecting yourself if that's what you're going to claim yourself as. Disrespecting your culture if that's what you're going to name yourself as. You see, I'm living in a world where people judge me by my skin color, or rather look at my race before they look at my face. So what I'm saying is you can't judge a book by its cover, and you can't judge a man just by looking at his color. You see, people will focus more on the outside and forget about what's beneath you. And all of these things can determine how people are going to treat you. But the truth is we're all human and we should all be treated equal. And it makes no sense when you're going around hating on other people. See, every day there's another brother just waiting, ready to pull another trigger. And as soon as he die, everybody around him going to be like, damn, there goes another nigga. So the next time you use the word, be careful on how you intend it. Because some might take it kindly and others might get offended. Some of us take chances, but me, I'm just giving it. Martin Luther King had a dream, and right now we're all living it. Because if it wasn't for him and all these other black leaders, a young brother like myself wouldn't even have these opportunities. And we got to stop the violence that's going on in our communities. You see, there's two things in this world that's very short, and that's life and time. But I'm just hoping y'all can understand me when I write this rhyme. I know a lot of people have different views on the word, and a lot of you are just very opinionated. But I'm just telling you the history of the word and how it originated. I understand a lot of you may feel a certain way about it. Well, this is how I feel about the word and what I got to say about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Turkana. You can follow him. It's, one sec, let me look. Turkana 94. Or Boogie Down 94. That Boogie Down 94 is on Snapchat, and Turkana 94 is with an underscore before 94. That's on Instagram. So check him out. He's a very talented poet. And I'm glad that he gave us permission to play that on the show. Our next guest of the evening is Mickey Z, and here we go. Okay, well, can you believe it's April already? It's time to talk to Mickey Z, our columnist from Astoria, New York, and the head of the Homeless Women Project in New York City. Hello, Mickey. How are you?
Hey, Chuck. Doing good here. A little cold up in New York for April, but otherwise good.
Yeah, it seems like you guys have really gotten slammed this year.
Yeah, we had snow on Monday, which now makes it that we had snow in the last week of September and now in the first week of April. So it snowed at least once in the past 8 months. So I don't know what happened to the seasons that I grew up with here, but they are long gone.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. Wow. Well, certainly all that snow is really hard for the people that you're helping that are out on the street.
Absolutely. It's I mean, the general vibe in New York is you can get a sense from people making jokes or just angrily talking about when is winter going to end. But when I on a daily basis, I'm interacting with homeless women, it's just heartbreaking, doesn't even do it justice. It's really, there's almost a cruel aspect to it that every time it seems that they've weathered it and the weather's going to change and maybe, you know, vibes are going to change on the street and they're going to get more money or whatever it might be. It's just, we just get slammed again with the bad weather, and the way it impacts them is devastating.
Wow. So, well, what are you having to do about it, and you know, how can the rest of us help?
Well, to answer the second part first, I have a GoFundMe under the name Helping Homeless Women NYC, which is for New York City, and any and all donations are extremely helpful. Because, like, the basic vibe is this, is with women that live on the street that don't get to go into a shelter, in many cases they don't want to go into a shelter because the horror stories are for the most part true, there are opportunities to get a room or a bed for a night for a certain amount of money. But the way to get that money is through panhandling. But then when the weather is this atrocious, it's unhealthy to be just sitting out in the rain or snow or some or very cold weather. So it's quite a challenge where they need to sit out to make the money in order to not sleep out. So it's this daily trade-off on their part. And so what I can do is when donations are really good, I'm able to give women that I've known for quite some time directly cash to help towards getting a bed that particular night, where it's like that, it's that direct to help in the sense that I'm not looking, thinking long term at all. I'm just thinking, well, tonight is horrendous. I could help her get inside as soon as possible. When I don't have that kind of money, but I have enough to do shopping and other stuff, I'm able to just give them supplies, hand warmers, rain ponchos, hats, gloves, scarves, long johns, socks, underwear, and enough non-perishable food that they can be less uncomfortable while they're out panhandling, and also have it off their mind that how am I going to divide my panhandling money? Well, if they know that some of these basics have been taken care of in terms of supplies and food, then they can come up with a number of this is how much I have to stay out to make in order to get a bed tonight, because it'll be dangerous to sleep outside in this weather. Mm-hmm. So those are basically the two ways that I contribute, that when folks like yourself help out by donating money, depending on how much I have, I'm able to make decisions in terms of whether I could just make the day of panhandling a little less painful, or if I'm doing really good in a month, I can directly help by giving cash towards them getting inside, meaning inside to like a safe room, because I mean, there's other options where they could sleep in the subways and all, but you can make some pretty safe assumptions about how comfortable and safe that is.
Yeah, for sure. What are these safe rooms like, and what sort of situations can they get into?
Well, it varies greatly. There are churches that will organize such places and nonprofits. There's one in Staten Island, for example, that you have to just take the ferry is free. You could take the ferry over. Also, if the women who I interact with, some of them are New Yorkers who have just, through a wide variety of reasons, wound up in this situation. Quite often that relates to an abusive male partner who basically through their violence tore down what they had built up together, and then the women are stuck on the street. Some of these women still have loose and tenuous connections to friends and so on in the New York City area. And so there might be a situation where a friend of a friend could say, hey, you could stay with me a couple of nights a week if you could help me out with this amount of money or so on. And they're extremely resourceful. Like, so the women that I help may know someone that they could stay at and barter, like between pay and barter, give some money. And also then if it's an older woman that they're staying with, do their laundry, do their shopping, and come up with some ways like it's a trade-off so they could actually be inside the room of one room of somebody's apartment. So therefore it's safe, it's clean, it's warm, and they have a loose connection to the person who runs it. Otherwise, it's going to be just more like a hostel, a safer church type of shelter and stuff like that. So it varies pretty widely as to the comfort of these rooms, but all of them are superior to the city shelters, and then of course either sleeping on the street or sleeping in the subway.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing? I mean this has got to be a financial drain on you.
Well, I don't want to present myself as a victim or anything here because of, you know, clearly I want the focus to be on the women, but by choice, I give more and more time to this project, sometimes at the detriment of my freelance earning capability. So that isn't always the wisest decision, but when you kind of get, this month is 18 months now, when you're this deep into what feels like a mission, you know, you do what you can to keep it going. And then during those months that, February in particular was a very, very slow month, financial donation wise. And you just figure out where you could put your own money in and how you could stretch the money. You know, in New York, there's a lot of dollar shops and you hope that people will donate, clothes or go out and buy some food. Like some people prefer not to give me the money, but will buy, material donations and drop them off to me.
Right.
And so what I've gotten good, I kind of feel like I'm running a business in the sense that what I've gotten good at each month is, you know, just keeping track of expenses, getting a rough estimate of how much money is coming in, how much material donations coming in. And then I just have to decide to the best of my ability how much of my own money I can afford to put in and how much of my time I could give. But the time is actually a labor of love. I enjoy going out and helping, but I have to be careful as to how much money I put in because it doesn't benefit anyone if I put myself in a precarious situation. So
right.
If I could raise more money, the basic message would be if I could raise more and more and more money, I am ready, willing, and able to give more and more time and effort in. But that has to be, that ratio varies from month to month based entirely on donations.
Yeah. You know, when you're on an airplane flying somewhere and they give all the spiels and everything, one of the things that they always mention is, hey, if we lose cabin pressure and the oxygen masks come down, others, you need to put yours on first and then deal with the kids. If you don't get yours on and you pass out, that's not going to help them at all, you know. Vicky Z from Astoria, New York. Last week, as you know, we didn't have a show last week, so we played like we could this time. Thanks again, Mickey Z. We'll see him the first week of the month.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Sampleization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, at the end of the Empire. Tonight, at the Moonrock Lake Public Library, they'll be reading from the best-selling book by Moonrock Lake self-published author and dog catcher, Solomon Sendak, entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town, and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt is kindly sent to us by Moonrock Lake Public Librarian Doris Morris. Well, anyway, there was a town, Jennifer Junction, not too far from Moonrock Lake, that had a warming scare not too long ago. Stories all about the folks in Jennifer Junction, Tommy and Robert S. Thompson and the waitress, and Carl with his college in his basement, and Guttner, and Jesse, and the old people, Grain Elevator Casino, and the radio station, wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then, sort of like the Lindbergh baby, sort of not, the Sox baby has been stolen. Maybe by that Laverna, the woman at the bank drive up, and maybe by the Foos who own Foos Foods. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl are trying to capture the Foos because they think they took Sweat Socks, the baby of the coach's teachers, a couple who named their kids Sweat because it, life, is all about giving 100% and grunting and working up a lather. Guttner and Ron Waters in the light blue Robin's Egg blue pickup are chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town because they think he took Sweat Socks. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not that used to complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story. Kind of steamy, not like daytime TV, like sweaty, like hot and sweaty, like moisture under your arms, other places. Sweat. Overall, ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal global warming in a small town. Good morning, or buenos dias, bonjour, guten tag, sapinen, as the case may be. I'm seated watching rush hour traffic, as it were, at the main intersection of our downtown area. Each of the four corners has a nice new wooden bench. Each is dedicated to the spouse of some prominent local person who felt guilty enough to invest money into a gold engraved plaque and who now knows it will never be enough, not one bench or 100. All in all, they're most comfortable. I choose where to sit primarily according to the direction of the wind, according to the radio report. There's, not a shitload of traffic, but some. There's Ed and Earl Edwards, the Edwards twins, heading off for their construction summer job. Here comes, there goes, our UPS route driver, Myrna Myers. She's a little woman, wiry, always moving, always on the go. If she were a Christmas tree, it would be the most difficult to place a star upon her head. It's like there's someone chasing her. She also works at Casey's. And in fact, someone is pursuing her. There's usually an attorney or a sheriff's deputy trying to hand her a subpoena to appear in court. Well, a while back, she went out for cigarettes and skim milk and actually never came back. She's got 9 jobs, literally. This, that, pizza farm. She doesn't live anywhere. Changes in the various employees' rooms. She still sees her husband and goes to all the children's activities. This is something she wanted. So the family's trying to be supportive. They're in counseling. Well, not Myrna, but the husband and the kids go every week, I guess. On the bench, kitty corner from me, are a group of elderly hooligans, a gang of them. Ever since they got the casino, you don't want to mess around with them. People almost don't come downtown if there's a bunch of them standing around. They've been known to shoot steelies, steel marbles, at autos, using wrist rockets. They put graffiti on the building sides and doors. FDR. I like Ike. Ben Hur rocks. High school kids find it disgusting. Oh, well, here's something. Here comes Michael Sullivan O. He farms just east of town. Must be bringing the tractor in to get some work done. I see he's wearing his gray sweatpants already, as am I. I'd say it's about 70-30 by now, but the momentum seems to be in favor of this thing. You know, Michael is an interesting case. His mother is Irish. His father, Japanese. They met at Berkeley. Michael went with them to one of Willie Nelson's Farm Aid concerts and had an epiphany of some sort, is how I understand it. They moved here and saw all the empty Main Street stores. Michael decided to bring back Midwestern agriculture, his own self. Yeah. He and the wife have 16 children, and she's expecting again. They farm 160 acres with what I would call a normal tractor. They have livestock. He wears coveralls. He's also studying crop dusting at CCC this term. She has chickens. Collects the eggs for egg money. They milk and use it themselves. The children walk together to town to school, eschewing any roads, cross country. Oh, a little house on the prairie, I suppose. Many times, all they do all day is walk back and forth. What they're doing is hoping they can bring back the 1940s and 1950s, is what I think, with busy downtown streets on Thursday nights. I certainly wish them well. You know, we might get some notice from the bigger papers in the area. It's kind of a novelty, the sweatpants promotion. Who knows, maybe the Today Show will come right down here to the four-way some morning to talk about the brave little town that would not be fooled, that could, that stood tall. The cold, hard facts, that's all we want, all we need. I kind of wonder how the different folks will come down on all this. Ah, geez, there's getting to be more traffic this morning than I ever remember encountering with a possible exception of that July 5th parade that one year. July 4th would not work because of not being able to find the key to the lock on the Historical Society storage garage where the kept the old stuff they wanted to put in the parade. So it all had to wait a day. Made for a large turnout, all the commotion and stress and such. Oh, there goes Betsy Pomp. Betsy Rose Pomp, our 6'9" elementary principal. I dare say 6'6" would have been sufficient. Well, she did play basketball here and at State. She could dunk it. I've seen her with the girls in their driveway. Well, I'm tallying pairs of sweatpants. And in this morning commute crowd, I'd count 3 in the affirmative and 10 and more with the antis. Of course, you can't see below the waist on those who are driving, so this could be a not-so-reliable survey. I've heard talk that a citywide, statewide, national, international search is already underway to try to find sweatpants sufficient in size and number to fit around the simply enormous posteriors of the, well, many of the citizens of the hamlet of Jennifer Junction. The big sweats. Oh, well. Mine here are large. They come in XL as well. Double, triple, and beyond. I suppose to infinity. I've heard you must journey to a major metropolitan area or go online to procure 4, 5, and 6 XL. That paper says that Rick's Sporting Goods has a full supply of smalls, medium, large, and 1X. They're 4XX. The last XXXL was sold at 5 minutes to 5 yesterday afternoon. The Rossbacher family has an ad running on eBay hoping to procure 6 pays of XXXXXXXL with elastic waistbands. The city's put together a team of full-time volunteers searching Craigslist 24/7. Editorial page of Bob's News has penned that Jennifer Junction ambassadors be sent wherever necessary. India, China, Bolivia, Bozeman, in order to find the right sizes. It's that important. If we can't act on something like this, when will we ever, they said. The article went on to say we should peruse the planet, browse every byway, tilt at every windmill, jousting, battling the global warming dragon, become men and women of La Mancha, seekers of sweats, doers of amazing deeds. Go for it. I'm sweating. It's hot. I'm pounding as fast as I can, trying to keep up with Jesse and Carl in the pumper truck Honda. I put my head down and stand up and watch my legs to see how hard I'm going and throw the butterfly handlebars side to side. I can hardly breathe. It's humid, hot. It's that darn humidity. It's that darn heat. I don't know where they're going. I was sitting downtown talking to that one guy who lives there. Jesse comes flying around the corner right through a red light. Robert S. Thompson said it was pink. Anyway, I took off. I'd mostly downhill or flat around here. That helped. Whenever Jesse looks in his rearview mirror, I look the other way. His side mirror is busted out. There must be in a hurry. How fast there go? Oh, it's just because I'm on a bike. I can't wait till I can get my license. I told Mom that Dad said he'd get me a car. She said, we'll see. She always says that. We flashed past a cop shop, and I see old La Berna looking outside through the bars of her window. There's a drive where the cop cars pull in and out, and it goes right by La Berna's cell, like she's back at her old job. Just as I suspected, Jesse pulled into Foods parking lot. I yanked over behind a rusted minivan where I could see through the van windows and still be on the other side of the van where old Sherlock and Watson couldn't see me. I wondered if they were going to citizens arrest the old Foods. Maybe it would be official. Except, well, Jesse's the fire department, Carl's the college. I watched Carl and Jesse till the Mexicans came out and drove away their minivan. Then, well, I just put down my kickstand. I sat with my arms crossed watching the scene. Jesse saw me, said something to Carl. They both turned around. Well, they waved me up to come up and talk. Hey, said Jesse, because I was at his window. Hey, I said. Stake out. Jesse nodded. Carl kept his eyes on the store. We got to report the Sox couple were on their way to the store, Jesse said. I nodded. And then I looked at the store. You could see practically the whole thing and everyone inside through that giant window. The Sox Yellow school bus was parked there all night, taking up the whole East Side parking lot area. We just don't know what they might be going down, said Jesse. I saw Bobby and Jim at one of the checkouts. Want me to go ask them? I said. Carl looked at Jesse. That might work, Carl said. Okay, I said. I pushed off to coast down to the front doors. Be careful, kid, I heard Jesse whisper, like he meant it. The Sox were still paying when I got there. I could see Carl and Jesse out the window. I waved. Jesse waved back. Carl put a hand to his brow and looked down at the pavement. When I came out, I got my bike and walked it over to the brown Honda fire engine. They kidnapped our own kid, right, kid, said Carl. It was the food, said Jesse, still in whisper mode. Laverna's chirping, huh? Carl added. Spilling her guts, said Jesse, now in a normal voice. They needed the Huggies, I said, for when they get a little sweat back. That it, said Carl. Nothing else? Huggies. Diet Pepsi. I looked at the clouds and said, chips. Nacho chips. Big bag. The Sox bus diesel engine cracked. They pulled slowly toward the exit, showing us plainly the Go Cows logo on the side. Homemade, but not too bad. I looked down at Carl. He was still watching the store. Inside the big front window, the two foods, Mary Wu and Larry Makes Two, they smiled and they waved. Carl and Jesse stared. I stood on my pedals, not moving, trying to balance. I finally had to drop down, though. I looked out toward the highway, the ball field, looking for someone I knew. I could see Ron on the radio through the big front window of the station. He was sitting at his big desk with a big microphone with a big American flag on the wall behind him and a clear jar of assorted candy in front of him. Tacked over the flag was the biggest pair of gray sweatpants in the world. I tried to hold onto the building and stand on my bike. My front tire's almost flat. Need to get air at Cenex. It's free. Someplace that costs. Smells like speed in the air. We're not that far from the elevator. Still smells, even though it's closed for the casino. Smells like caramel corn, too. You know, I look around to see where that's coming from. I can hear someone walking in high heels. Oh, it's a lady from the office supply store. She gets dressed up to work there. Ron on the radio can see me now. They have a microphone outside. I don't know where it is, but I can hear it. He's talking about sweatpants and America, baseball, the war. Last week's United Methodist early service, and next week, Apple Pie Day. People are supposed to put hot pies in their windows, and if somebody walks all around instead of driving, you're supposed to be able to smell them. You can listen to them if you want, if you're downtown. Family values. That's what we're talking about, people. Tradition. A good day's honest wage for a day's work. Hot, honest labor, sweatpants. Our founding fathers and mothers wore them, though you don't hear that from the liberal media. They did not hear about warming. It's American as American can be if you think for one moment. Oh, here comes a bunch of those seniors. They're really starting to run wild. That's what some people say. Pretty soon you won't be able to go downtown without being harassed by them. Harass me. Well, it's like pushing or something. They walk right by me like I'm not here. They wear shorts and sandals. The old guys aren't wearing shirts. Walmart's got a new greeter on the north entrance door. I already know him. Walter Whiteman. He's rich. Maybe he's lucky. I don't know. He has the Enchanted Companies. Enchanted Golf Course. Enchanted Bowling Burlesque. The Enchanted Feedlot. Well, they weren't called that when his dad had the company. Walt says he's been on an alien spaceship, mothership. He came to talk to my class one time. I'm not sure if Miss Porter still lives in town or not. Yesterday, Carl and Jesse were in there all day on one of those hard plastic benches surveilling him while he greeted. They think he might know something about Lil Sweat. Maybe part of the bunch, the gang. Carl and Jesse must have all the inside dope. They could just be lonely, like Walter, maybe. Sitting in Walmart's at least better than sitting at home. Psst. You hear that? Guttner in Bogota booth. He says it was Steve, the pizza kid guy, who took little baby socks. He is out all the night long, driving around, looking in all the windows, seeing who is up and who is fucking or sleeping. He looked at all the windows He has a woman, no child. He sees what he likes, he takes it. Zoom, up he goes again. See? Kuttner works for the city, so he has coffee all over town and talks to a lot of people. So he would, no. I think he's awesome. His Starks Brown work shirts are always so fresh, pressed every day. They look nice with his gray sweatpants and shiny black work boots. This gum is old. I've got some more in my purse. You want some? If you don't like blueberry, there's vanilla. Yeah, I've been made aware. Steve the pizza kid, guy, dude, won't wear the sweatpants. He's in the definite minority by now, I dare say. He's told the local newspapers on record he does not believe in all this anti-global warming crap, and I quote, which must mean he's in favor of global warming, which is thoroughly disagreeable and will not sell him very many pizzas. Something I would think his employer would want to look into and cut his dick off. Oh. Poor little sweat socks. Poor dear sweet sweat. What's become of you? He's a traitor, that Steve. A dickless coward. That's what old Guttner said about Pizza Steve this morning. One time a woman did that with her husband. Cut off his dick. Then tossed it in the front yard on her way to work. That got in the news. I'm not sure if a pizza delivery guy has ever had that done to him. That would have been in the news. Guttner was eating sausage, talking about it. I don't know why he's so serious about the sweatpants. He's really into the whole thing. He wears sweats all day. Sometimes he wears two or three pairs at a time. When he sees Steve on the road, he stares. Sometimes he sticks his head out the pickup window and stares and yells and makes that one sign. There's a certain hand signal that some of the pro sweats are using. You take your two fists out in front of you, put them together, and then pull them apart like you're pulling the drawstring on your sweatpants tight. Also kind of resembles a garrote being pulled around somebody's neck if you ever saw The Godfather. It's drizzly today. Imagine myself seated on a bench in downtown London, maybe Duluth. If I close my eyes, it's conceivable. Jesse in the fire truck, and well, it's actually an ancient brown Honda, revving up his engine. He likes to think of it as a fire truck, and well, that's fine. He's trying to get up enough momentum to beat Guttner in the city truck right beside. There are not really two lanes, but since there are no cars parked right now, that allows for Guttner to pull up next to Jesse and agitate those two. Guttner, I believe, with that thick accent, is European, perhaps Eurasian. Someone said he came here from South Dakota. I rather doubt that account. To me, he overcompensates by being or appearing to be uber patriotic. I don't think that applies to his battles with Jesse. I think that's just for his own entertainment. But as regards Steve, the supreme pizza dude, there's more to it than that. He just wants to fit in, Gut. We all do. Well, not me so much, but others, I believe. So he goes on and on about not believing in global warming, wearing sweatpants because, as an outsider, he sees others doing thus and calling it patriotism. Guttner. It's an unusual spelling. Maybe Swiss. I know of a man who is Johnny, that's J-H-O-N-N-Y, his whole life, because his parents could not spell. Crimes of our parents forever haunt us. And there they go. I wear the sweatpants and listen to Sweaty Waters in the morning. But I do note that Guttner's belief might be a little misplaced and insincere. Not entirely necessary, perhaps. Jesse had him halfway through the intersection, but Guttner and that six-banger was just too much. So Jesse lets off to live another day and turns up the radio in face-saving defiance. The old people across the street on the corner watched in silence, tossing cigarette butts at the gutter, blowing smoke rings at the police car that just pulled up. Those people. Two of the old ladies are sticking their heads in the window with a cruiser, playing with the cop's hair and hat and tie, while the old guy spray paint "Blow Me" on the side and let the air out of his black back tires. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Remember, it's listener-supported radio. So head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and show them some support. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck. Well, you do all the interviews, the technical guru stuff, everything to make this show possible. Thanks to our guests, Mickey Z, Jim Fetzer, Richard Flamer, Phil Ferruccio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you'll find information about all of our regular guests. Also, the show archives, newdream.us, also penmagazine.us. If you'd like to contribute to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawkstrong. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Mohammed Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
April, come she will, when streams are ripe and swelled with rain. May she will stay, resting in my arms again. She'll change her tune, in restless walks she'll prowl the night. She'll fly, she will fly, and give no warning to her flight. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country is founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means.
This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves...